Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, as temperatures climb this week, more folks will head to the Delaware River to cool off. But that summer fun can quickly turn dangerous without the right preparation. Coming up, the National Park Service shares essential safety tips on avoiding heat exhaustion, staying safe around wildlife like black bears and snakes, and protecting both yourself and the river this season. The American Red Cross says summer is one of the toughest times of the year to keep blood supplies stocked. We'll find out why donors are urgently needed right now and how you can help. Plus, local economic perspective from James B. Huntington. And sports with Mark and Ronald. How far can the U.S. go in the World Cup? Wimbledon is underway. And what's next for the Mets after they fired their manager? Coming up after the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. The U.S. Supreme Court is issuing opinions today. This morning, the justices declined to take a case that President Trump very much wanted them to hear. He wanted them to throw out a New York jury's finding that he sexually abused writer E. Jean Carroll. The high court has declined to do so. Trump was ordered to pay $5 million in damages in the case. President Trump is saying there will be a meeting tomorrow in Qatar, but it's not clear that Iran will agree. This comes as the ceasefire between the U.S. and Iran grew shaky over the weekend. Iran fired on Gulf neighbors, and the U.S. struck Iran. Jake Sullivan was the national security advisor to former President Joe Biden. He says there is a lack of clarity on the memo of understanding President Trump signed with Iran.
The flare-up over the weekend, I think we'll see something like it going forward, but we'll also see both sides scrambling to try to keep it from becoming the war that we saw a couple of months ago. Both sides are going to want to try as much as possible to keep the ceasefire in place, even though from time to time we will see these kinds of strikes.
He spoke to NPR's Morning Edition. Stocks opened higher this morning as Comcast announced plans to split itself into two separate companies. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose about 260 points at the start of this holiday-shortened trading week.
Investors cheered Comcast's decision to spin off its entertainment division into a standalone media company. Comcast will retain its cable and wireless connectivity business. The new company will get NBC, Universal Studios, the Peacock streaming service, and the network of theme parks. The company says it believes the split will give both parts of the business more flexibility to grow and invest. Samsung is teaming up with another giant South Korean company to build a half-trillion-dollar computer chip factory. The move is part of the massive worldwide investment sparked by demand for artificial intelligence chips. Asian stocks were mixed overnight, down in Seoul, but up in Tokyo, Hong Kong, and Shanghai. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
Big changes will kick in for the federal student loan system this week. NPR's Corey Turner has more.
The changes come courtesy of last year's One Big Beautiful Bill Act and kick in Wednesday, July 1st. Among them, Republicans created two new repayment plans, and they'll be the only options for new borrowers. The Biden-era SAVE plan is also being shut down. The millions of current borrowers still in SAVE will need to choose another plan, or they'll be automatically moved into what is arguably the least flexible option. There will also be a big change for graduate students. Once allowed to borrow as much as they needed, most will now be limited to $20,500 a year. Only students in a handful of professional fields, including dentistry, podiatry, and medicine, will be able to borrow up to $50,000 a year. Corey Turner, NPR News.
You're listening to NPR. It's been more than 4 days since twin earthquakes rocked Venezuela. There was a strong aftershock today. The government says more than 1,450 people have died. Tens of thousands of people are missing. Parts of northern Venezuela are flattened rubble. Rescuers still have little equipment to help find survivors. In the U.S., more than 60 million people are under heat cautions. Today, areas from Kansas to Michigan will get temperatures of 100 degrees or hotter. Meanwhile, the extended heat wave in Europe is now being linked to hundreds of deaths that occurred over the past several days. Esme Nicholson has more from Berlin.
The World Health Organization says that as of Sunday, more than 1,300 excess deaths have been recorded in Europe since June 21st, underlining that heat stress is a silent killer. It warns that European homes, workplaces and schools are not built to withstand extreme heat and calls for action across the continent to safeguard against temperatures that are rising at twice the global average. In Germany, two forest fires have broken out in regions with a high density of unexploded ordnance, one of them still contaminated with World War II ammunition. In Poland, the entire railway network ground to a halt, leaving passengers stranded on broken down trains. For NPR News, I'm Esme Nicholson in Berlin.
The knockout round has started at the World Cup. Canada advanced yesterday by beating South Africa. Today, Brazil plays Japan, Germany plays Paraguay, and Morocco plays the Netherlands. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Capital One, offering their premium travel card, Venture X. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Details at CapitalOne.com. And listeners like you who donate to this NPR station.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. We're looking at a heat wave this week in the region with temperatures climbing into the mid to upper 90s. And as summer recreation ramps up on the Delaware River to help folks cool off, National Park Service rangers are reminding folks that staying safe means more than just wearing a life jacket. On average, two people drown each year in the upper Delaware River region. I spoke with Park Ranger Susie Casper about who says visitors should be prepared for everything from heat exhaustion and hypothermia to wildlife encounters, changing river conditions, and respecting both the environment and private property.
Well, unfortunately, during the summer months, yes, there's always definitely incidents, and there's incidents that we don't even know about sometimes. So if people do have incidents and they have, a close call, let us know, because we like to track those statistics and, educate people on the importance of wearing life jackets. So, yeah, we've had a few incidents already this summer, but luckily no fatalities or major injuries so far. So we're doing pretty good.
And to note, no one who was wearing a properly fitted life jacket has drowned while on or in the river. So it's so important to wear a life jacket. We're going to talk a little bit more about that, but talk a little bit more about how the current on the Delaware is often stronger than it appears and how conditions are constantly changing.
Yeah, conditions definitely change throughout the summer. We can get a heavy rainstorm and the river could rise really quickly, even by a couple of feet. Even when the river is really low. So right now it's about just over 3 feet, which is a very normal level for the summer months, especially if we don't have a lot of rain. The river looks very calm and very placid in a lot of places. So when you're not going through the rapids, and so people think it's really calm and you can just go in for a swim or maybe even swim across the river, which is, we actually never recommend doing that. If you're going to be in the water at all, please always wear a life jacket. And like you said, yeah, we've never had a person drown who's been wearing a properly fitted secured life jacket. So if you are going to go in for a swim, make sure you have that life jacket on and make sure it's nice and snug.
All right, let's remind folks about the top 10 safety tips on the river. Of course, number one, wear a properly fitted life jacket.
Yeah, absolutely. Life jackets are so important. If you don't do anything else, just make sure you have that life jacket and you have it on. Adults, you have to, if you choose for some reason not to wear it, which you should, it has to be within reach of you. So that way, if your boat does slip over or you fall out for some reason, you can, swim to it very quickly, or somebody can throw it to you if you start to get into trouble. Because a lot of people don't realize that, it's not like in the movies where you see a drowning person, they're screaming for help. You know, a drowning person can very rarely let you know that they're drowning because they're trying to gasp for that last breath of air. So keep a really close eye on your friends and family. And that's one of our, tips for making sure you guys have a safe trip. We've been out there many, many times, and people have, unfortunately, their friends are right next to them, and they can't see that they're struggling because everybody's having fun and a great time. So it's really important to keep an eye on your friends and family when they're out there. And then, of course, we can't forget about the little ones. So children 12 and under have to be wearing their life jackets the entire time when they're on the water. So make sure you get those kids to comply. And no better way to get them to want to put them on if mom and dad and the rest of the family has them on as well. So be a good example and wear your life jacket with your family.
Coming in at number two, watch out for ticks. And especially this year, tick season is just off the charts.
Yeah, absolutely. So you don't think about ticks because you're going on the river, but, you know, you're going to be launching at our river accesses or maybe stop for lunch. And there's a lot of, you know, high grass around and there's deer everywhere and all the little critters that carry ticks. So make sure that you, you know, you're wearing, you know, tick repellent or, and then especially when you get home, you know, do that tick check when you go to take a shower at the end of the day.
And stay hydrated, an important tip as well. The forecast calls for extreme heat. Some forecasters calling it a heat dome. Do you have...
Dome. I haven't heard that
yet.
Yeah, oh, man.
You know, they're always thinking of something new to scare us. But do you guys get concerned when it gets this hot? Because that naturally might attract more people to the river.
Oh, absolutely. It's probably going to be very busy. And I mean, I would want to be in the water when it's over 90 degrees as well. So it is so important to stay hydrated. So especially when it's going to be this hot and you're going to be, you plan on being out on the water. We always tell people to, which is one of our safety tips, is to file like or have a float plan. It sounds very kind of technical and scary, but it's really not. It's letting your friends and family who aren't with you, letting them know where you're going, you know, on the river, when you expect to return, and, you know, just having, you know, phone numbers available just in case something should happen. And, you know, they have to notify the National Park Service. But, yeah, staying hydrated. So over, like, at least a gallon of water almost for these hot conditions. But that gallon of water can also include, you know, sports drinks that can replenish your electrolytes. Because when you're drinking lots of water, you need to keep those electrolytes up. So that goes hand in hand with don't just drink water. But, you know, even though you're not going to be probably as hungry as you normally are because of the heat, but have some, like, you know, salty snacks like granola bars or trail mix, things like that, that will keep your electrolytes up. Because it is so easy to get, you know, super just, you feel so just bogged down when it gets so hot. So keep that up. And then, of course, wear sunscreen and wear it, reapply often, especially if you're going in the water at all. So, yeah, it's so easy to get super sunburnt on the river. Wear a hat, wear sunglasses. I don't know if you've ever had your head sunburned, but it is not fun. And then your eyes, it can definitely, the strong sun, especially when the sun is reflecting up from the water, it can damage your eyes if you have prolonged exposure. So wear a hat, wear sunglasses. You know, you can, there's so many, if you don't like to keep wearing sunblock all the time, you know, there's so many different UV protectant shirts out there nowadays that people wear in pants. And they're, you know, they dry quickly if you go in the water as well.
One of the other tips is to know the signs for hypothermia and heat exhaustion and heat stroke. Can you just remind folks what those are and what they should be looking for?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, this goes hand in hand with keeping an eye on your friends and family. You know, when you start to get heat exhaustion, you know, your body is really just out of whack with those electrolytes. So you have to get these, you know, if somebody's experiencing any type of symptoms where they're just not feeling well, you want to make sure you get them out of the conditions. A real, real easy way is to, you know, if you're pull off to the side of the river and you can kind of just splash cool water on someone, you know, get them cool off, fan them down. And then, of course, get them off the river, because if they're already starting to show signs of, you know, heat exhaustion, and they've stopped sweating is one of those signs as well, that's not good. And it's really interesting because we don't think about hypothermia in the summer months. We always think of those heat-related illnesses. But the river temperature right now is only about 70 degrees. If somebody finds, like, they're wet and they're wet all day long and they've been in the river, hypothermia can actually happen pretty easily, especially for, you know, younger children. We actually had somebody just a couple of weeks ago who had a hypothermia-related illness because it was really, really cold out, you know, for the summertime. So just keep an eye on your friends and family. If they don't seem like they're feeling well, pull up the river, you know, get help and get them out of the elements is the most important thing.
Another tip is to give animals space. And we're talking about wildlife. There's a large variety of wildlife that call the Upper Delaware River region home. Talk about some of those critters that are out there.
Yeah. So we have so many different wildlife. Actually 2 days ago, we were doing the river training for our new staff. And there was a little baby fawn who decided to swim across the river. We're not sure if mom was on the other side or not. And your first instinct is, oh my goodness, this deer is going to, you know, get into trouble on the river. But give wildlife their space. You have to let nature take its course. You know, mom will find that baby somewhere down the line. We have bears. We have lots of black bears. We do see them swim across the river occasionally. They're actually pretty good swimmers as well. But we see them. We have a large population of bald eagles. So we see them often. So it's always really, it's nice to, you get so excited when you see a bald eagle, you want to scream, bald eagle, bald eagle. But, you know, it could scare them. And, of course, they have their young that are just fledging the nest right now. So they're learning to fly for the first time and they're learning how to fish. So just keep them at a distance. You know, keep your viewing at a distance and try to be quiet and observe them because they are so beautiful. And if you're nice and quiet, they won't pay attention to you and they'll likely swoop down and catch a fish right in front of you. And it'd be so beautiful.
What about snakes? Are there snakes in the area?
Yes, we do have snakes. So a lot of water snakes, gardener snakes. We do have rattlesnakes as well. So if you do see anything like that, especially when you're on the shoreline, I always tell people, if you're going to walk up on the shoreline at all to take lunch, especially if you're in a high grass area, I would say take your paddle with you. Just that way you can, you know, kind of put it in front of you before you take a step. The last thing you want to do is step on a snake or surprise a rattlesnake. So it's not very common that we see them, but they do exist. So just be aware of that. We also have a lot of different ducks and geese and things like that. And I know, you know, a lot of us grew up feeding the ducks in the pond bred and things like that. But on the river here, it's really important that, especially for the young ducks, that we're not feeding them. Because, you know, Cheetos, marshmallows, Doritos, you know, your sandwich from your bread is not a part of their natural diet. And right now they're learning how to forage for food. And then, so when the visitors go home, in the fall, these little ducks don't know how to forage for food anymore. So, it's really important just to leave them be. They're going to want to come and beg food from you, but please try to refrain from feeding them.
And keep your pets on a leash if you're bringing them down to the river, too.
No, absolutely. So, yeah, so both states, New York and Pennsylvania, have leash laws. And it's really just for, you know, not only for, you know, everybody else's safety, but for your dog's safety as well. It never fails that there's only one person in the access with the dog and they're running around having a good time. And then all of a sudden somebody shows up and there's a dog fight. So just keep your pet on the leash and please pick up after them. Those little bags that we have around, those little green and black bags for the dog refuse, please take them with you because there's nothing worse than having not only the refuse in the bag, but now we've got the bag that we have to pick up as well, and we don't want that to leach into the environment. So, yeah, please definitely pick up after your pet. And there's life jackets for dogs, too. Even though dogs are generally good swimmers, the river is strong. So protect your pets and get a life jacket for them if you bring them out as well.
And another important thing to remember is that the Upper Delaware Scenic and Recreational River is surrounded by private, state, and federal agency property. So it's important that people stay on public land. Don't, you know, get out and disembark on private property or where there's a house.
Yeah, absolutely. So there is a lot of land that is state and, federally owned and there's railroad right away. It's pretty easy to tell these areas. So if you do want to pull off for lunch or just to take a rest, please don't do it in front of somebody's home. And please don't go to the bathroom in front of somebody's lawn. There are several different river accesses where there are portable toilets. Of course, if you're with a canoe livery, they have toilets for you as well. So just kind of practice that respect for people's property. And then, of course, our park is pack it in, pack it out. So that means that all the trash that you bring with you, we ask you bring it back and dispose of it at the end of your trip. That also reminds me that there is also glass is not allowed on the river anymore. This has been for a couple of years now, and it's kind of for obvious reasons. You know, glass is no good if it breaks. One of our most common injuries is people cutting their feet. So wear really good protective footwear when you're out on the river, if you don't have river shoes. Avoid things like Crocs and sandals because, A, the glass can cut through them and sharp rocks, but also, too, they're made of, you know, very light material that floats. So they will fall right off of your feet. So if you don't have river shoes, make sure you wear like an old sneaker or something like that, and you will thank me because the rocks are sharp, slippery, there's fishing hooks, and unfortunately that glass that's, been in the river for some time now.
Where can folks stay informed about the river safety rules, safety tips, and conditions on the river?
Absolutely. So we have, of course, our website has a wealth of information on there. So if you're planning a river trip, maybe you're not a river person. We have all kinds of other things on there where you can learn about our park. So, coming to visit the Zanker Museum, the Roebling Bridge here in Lackawaxen. We also have a festival coming up, the Zingray Festival, on Saturday, July 11th. So there's information about that on there, and it's free fun for the whole family. And you can actually come there and learn all about water safety if you're interested. But it has so much information about planning your river trip as well, and, you know, these tips on how to stay safe and just how to plan your how to plan your trip when you're going out. So our internet page, and then also we have our Facebook. We have a Facebook account, and we have Instagram, and you can link to those from our website. And so if we have any type of, let's just say we have a high water event or flooding or what have you, or, you know, some sort of severe weather, we will actually update our Facebook and Instagram pages, and so you can be aware of those as well. We also have our river hotline, and that number is 845-252-7100, and we update that daily by 9 a.m. So if you don't have, you know, access to the internet, you can call that number when you get into town, and it'll give you the up-to-date river conditions for that day.
And it's available 24/7 through October 31st. But let's note that cell phone reception can be a little spotty. So there could be areas in the park with limited or no cell phone reception. So lots of ways to stay informed and stay safe when you're out enjoying the Upper Delaware River. That's Susie Kaspar, park ranger for the Upper Delaware Scenic and Recreational River with the National Park Service. Susie, thank you so much and have a great summer.
Thank you. Be safe out there, everyone. Don't forget those life jackets.
Still to come, we'll talk with the American Red Cross about the growing need for blood donors this summer and why one appointment could save multiple lives. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support comes from Garnet Health Medical Center, Catskills. From inpatient and outpatient care to primary, urgent, and specialty care with Garnet Health doctors in Sullivan County. Exceptional lives here. Learn more at garnethealth.org.
Wherever you go, take Radio Catskill with you. Stream your favorite shows, music, and podcasts anytime, anywhere with our new and improved app. Stay connected with local news and national headlines all in one place. You can even send us your thoughts with the Talk to Us feature, audio or video, right from your phone. No radio? No problem. Just press play. It's Radio Catskill right in your pocket. Download the app today on iPhone or Android.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Summer vacations, holiday celebrations, and severe weather can make it harder to keep the nation's blood supply at safe levels. The American Red Cross is urging people to roll up their sleeves and donate before seasonal shortages become more severe. Joining us now is Lori Chapman of the American Red Cross to tell us about why every donation matters. Lori, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for putting out this urgent need of ours.
Yeah, it seems like every summer the Red Cross is putting out that appeal for blood donors, and I mentioned, you know, why some of that is, but talk a little bit more about what makes this time of year especially challenging for maintaining the blood supply.
You know, the challenge is people are on vacation, people are quite busy in the summer, or maybe just spending more time outdoors, or, you know, have their kids who weren't in school all year. And, you know, with the increase in travel, unfortunately, it's also an increase in car accidents and, you know, traumatic events that require more blood in the summer months.
What are you seeing right now in the blood supply in the nation, regionally, and what's prompting the call?
Nationally, the numbers are down. Our inventory is low. We also have one of the lowest levels of donor turnout in a very long time. So, you know, we need people to get out here. And, you know, blood is the one thing that cannot be manufactured, and it has to come from our donors.
Do you think fewer people are making or keeping appointments as part of that, too?
The appointment counts are definitely low. And then, you know, we always have like some no-shows, and we understand that things happen and that there will be no-shows. But, you know, every 2 seconds, someone in the U.S. needs blood.
We mentioned that this week in our area, in the whole region, actually, there's going to be extreme heat, severe weather, including storms, also a concern. How does that impact the blood supply?
So the extreme heat definitely does impact the blood supply, and that would be because, you know, sometimes our sites have air conditioning failures, or they just can't keep up to keep the temperature as cool as we need it to be, because that'll just cause, you know, less reactions. If people get hot when they're donating blood, it's not comfortable. And then, you know, a lot of times people aren't as hydrated as they need to be before you donate blood. It's very important to be very hydrated. And then they show up and the numbers, their numbers just aren't where they need to be, and they end up being deferred and we'd have to turn them away. So the heat definitely affects our supply.
The Red Cross supplies about 40% of the nation's blood. Can you help us understand just how quickly donated blood is used once it's collected?
Yeah, like I said, every 2 seconds, someone in the U.S. needs blood or platelets. There's about 29,000 units of red blood cells that are needed every day in the U.S. And this would be for various reasons, between car accident victims, cancer. I mean, you know, blood is a large therapy for a lot of cancer patients. There's sickle cell patients that need many blood transfusions. There's a lot of reasons that blood transfusions are needed. The average red blood cell transfusion is 3 units. And when somebody comes in to donate, they donate 1 unit. So it's a number that we have to try to stay ahead of.
Are there particular blood types that are especially needed right now, or is it just every blood type matters?
All types are always needed, but the blood type that's most often requested by hospitals is type O.
And for someone who's never donated before, what should they expect during the donation process? How long does it take, and what can they do to prepare? You mentioned staying hydrated.
Yes, staying hydrated is most important. Eating some iron-rich foods the morning of, the day before, definitely a meal before you come in to donate. Definitely drink water. And, you'll come in, you'll go through a health history. It's fairly quick. The whole thing can be 30 to 45 minutes. And then, we'll take your blood. And then we ask you to sit in our canteen, which is where you have some light snacks to help replenish and a drink. And we just ask you to sit there for 15 minutes just to make sure you're fine before you walk out the door.
But
it is a quick process.
Yeah, and we mentioned earlier that the donor numbers are down, and there's an effort now with the Red Cross to help attract younger donors, partnering with Warner Brothers Discovery and Looney Tunes this summer. Talk about this campaign and how it attracts new donors.
Yeah, we're super excited about this this T-shirt that we have coming from June 29th to July 12th. All donors will receive a Red Cross Looney Tunes collaboration T-shirt, actually celebrating America's 250th anniversary. So it's not really something that we've done before, obviously. It's the 250th, so it is such a cute shirt, and we're really hoping that that people love it and they come out and get the shirt.
Many people may worry that they don't qualify to donate. Talk about the basic eligibility requirements and maybe some of the common misconceptions about who can donate.
Okay. Well, I mean, just about everybody can donate. If you're on any medications or have any health concerns that you aren't sure, you can always call 1-800-RED-CROSS ahead of time. They have lists of what would defer you. But for the most part, you need to be in New York. You'd have to be 16 with parental consent, 17 without it, weigh at least 110 pounds, be in generally good health. If you're not feeling well, we will ask you to stay home. But there's no age restriction. There's really no restrictions. If you are on medications and you're not sure, then just call 1-800-RED-CROSS. They can definitely help.
Beyond giving blood, are there other ways people can support your mission in their communities?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the Red Cross we are not-for-profit, so we do always accept financial donations. We are always looking for volunteers, whether that be on our disaster services side, our service to the armed forces, or in biomed, where, we depend on our volunteers to do our registration and help out in canteen. There are always volunteer opportunities as well.
Finally, if someone who's listening today decides they want to donate, what's the easiest way to make an appointment, and how soon would you encourage them to do it?
Yeah, the easiest way to make an appointment would be either download our American Red Cross Blood Donor app, go to redcrossblood.org, or call 1-800-RED-CROSS. That would be the easiest way, and I would encourage signing up today, definitely.
And what's the one message you want folks to hear as we head into the July 4th holiday and the rest of the summer?
I would say that every 2 seconds, someone in the U.S. needs blood, and that's huge, huge need. And our patients depend on us to supply the blood to these hospitals, which is where we depend on our donors to come out and help. Like I said before, it's the one thing that can't be manufactured, but is life-saving. This is a life-saving mission that we are on.
And just did a quick search by zip code at redcrossblood.org for blood drives happening in the area. There are several happening this week. Tomorrow, Port Jervis at the Elks Lodge, in Middletown at the Raymore in Flanagan, at the LCBC Church in Dixon City over in Northeast Pennsylvania. Also some tomorrow happening in Delhi at the Delhi Rehabilitation Nursing Center. And at the Warwick Volunteer Ambulance EMS tomorrow. You can search a whole date range or a specific city by your zip code at redcrossblood.org to donate. That's Lori Chapman we've been talking to about the need for blood this summer. She's with the American Red Cross. Lori, thanks.
Thank you so much.
And when we come back, it's Local Economic Perspective from James B. Huntington. You're listening to Radio Chatskill.
Wherever you go, take Radio Catskill with you. Stream your favorite shows, music, and podcasts anytime, anywhere with our new and improved app. Stay connected with local news and national headlines all in one place. You can even send us your thoughts with the Talk to Us feature, audio or video, right from your phone. No radio? No problem. Just press play. It's Radio Catskill right in your pocket. Download the app today on iPhone or Android.
Picture it. You're trying to pick a place for dinner. One restaurant has 100 great reviews and 2 really bad ones. Do you make the reservation?
Once we think about something in negative terms, that way of thinking about it tends to stick in our minds and resist subsequent attempts to change it.
Why our minds are biased toward the negative, this week on Hidden Brain from NPR. Today at 2 on Radio Catskill.
It's Radio Chatskill, and on a Monday, we're going to check in with James B. Huntington, local economist and author, for a local perspective on the economy. James B., good morning.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, listeners.
Well, let's talk about the ever-changing economy here. What happened with inflation last week?
Well, it went up. It went up more. And the headline says inflation accelerated in May as Iran war pushed up prices, from the New York Times. But we don't know. It says the war with Iran didn't just push up energy prices. It made the whole U.S. inflation problem worse. But we don't know that. We don't know what else was going into it. The key thing is that more than just energy prices went up. I don't know if energy prices, they would have gone up from a year ago, but not from a month ago, because they're down. But up 4.1% in general since a year earlier in general. That's the highest inflation rate in more than 3 years. So the core measure that excludes food and energy prices was still up 3.4% from a year earlier. So we have some conflict going on here between different branches of the government as far as what to do with these things. But overall, though, the consumers kept spending. It went up 0.7% in May, which was quite a bit more than the increase in prices.
Yeah, these talks with Iran, there was a ceasefire, but it's very tenuous. There were strikes over the weekend. There are new talks that are scheduled to take place on Tuesday. But as you said, Americans continue to spend. Are Americans starting to feel better about the economy?
Yes, it's looking quite optimistic. There's a long-running survey held by the University of Michigan saw an end to a decrease that had gone on since February. Gas prices are down, and there's more reason, I think, for optimism in the Gulf than there was, say, a month ago, even if we don't know if these ceasefires are going to stand up. But even though people are paying more, they're happier in general, and they know what the problems are, and maybe that helps them. So it's people are happier.
People are happier, and the economy might be appear to be performing relatively well with some growth that's solid. But there is an interesting story here about a grocery price emergency in the country. What's that?
Yes. Well, this was in the Times also. It said, that people are seeing groceries being very high, and it's sort of masked by other problems and things, but it's the real issues they have are, in general, with rising prices, 4-to-1, according to this survey. Americans are saying that prices are the problem, not pay not going up as much. We're 2/3 saying they're struggling today, so they have food as the single biggest source of financial pressure. It's more than double any other area. Housing was second with 15%, and 35% said the real problem here was food. So different areas, and meat apparently is the worst. That's like 6 times the share of people naming that named the next highest one, which was coffee, tea, other beverages. But beef has gone up 1/3 in 2 years, which is a lot. So it's, like I mentioned, a family buying just 2 pounds of ground beef a week is paying about $10 or more every month, $120 a year, for the same things. Problems in the meatpacking industry and drought shrinking the number of cattle in the U.S. Tariffs made beef more expensive last year, and a number of things have come together here. So there may be something going on, some efforts to rein these things in to help consumers somehow with food prices, because that's really where the problem is.
Well, I could attest, having been at the grocery store yesterday, there is some sticker shock when it comes to certain foods, especially when it comes to beef. You know, it was a nice night, thought maybe we'd put a steak on the grill. It turns out, after I looked at the price of one steak, we were having chicken. A little expensive. What about airfares as well? High jet fuel costs due to some of the activity in Iran is blamed for that. Have we seen the airfares rise with those jet fuel costs?
Yes, they are up. Everyone seems to know that as far as people responding and the stories in the paper. But there is some variation between different kinds of trips. Comparing with the same time last year, the highest ones, the highest consistent percentages are domestic flights, especially the longer ones, where they have 14 possible runs on this thing, and they have one that went down 13% if you're going from JFK to Seattle, but everything else was up from 14% to 77% coast to coast. The closer ones, the smaller, under 1,000-mile runs, are doing better, but still up. However, if you look at U.S. to farther away destinations, especially Asia from either coast, they're better. And Europe from either the east or the west coast, is a mixture of up and down. So it depends on the trip you're thinking about booking. So I would not assume that everything is way up. I would certainly check out fares and see, because you may be pleasantly surprised depending on where you're going and when you're going.
All right. Let's talk about some of the AI news out there. How are big companies aiming to ease AI and AI transitions for American workers?
Well, this is something where there's been a lot of assumptions, valid or not valid, and a lot of talking about how many jobs AI is going to cost. And there has not been any federal program coming through. So we have a group of employers, state governors, and foundations have combined to raise $500 million as a fund to help what happens when we know what will happen. If we see large numbers of jobs, significant numbers of jobs being lost, which we really haven't so far, it's been awfully small. And when you factor down these companies who say, well, they're cutting 5,000 jobs, but then they say that they'll do that over 3 years, so you have 5,000 divided by 36 is not a lot of people. It doesn't make a dent in anything if they're spreading it out over 3 years. But if these things really get going, then the organization that's been put together to do this will work with governors. Certain places will have technical assistance. A lot of them will work with community colleges, which are falling out to be about the best place, the best way of delivering reskilling and helping workers come up with new jobs. So all of that is, it will vary from place to place. It's called the Raise Us mission. And it is, and we'll look forward to some help if we really get smashed with job cuts driven by AI.
All right. Well, let's talk about the numbers. What were stock, oil, and other prices early this morning, and how did they change?
Okay. 1 week changes. Gold, $40.49 per ounce, which is down $157. That's been trending down the past several months. Silver, $57.90, did even worse, dropped $8.37. The ratio between silver and gold is now 70-1. Silver is suffering even more. Dow Jones Industrial Average, 51,876, up 311. That's three straight weeks where it went up 300 and some. It's the NASDAQ, as we'll see, has not always been following, but the Dow is still getting its investments. People are still putting money into it. NASDAQ, 25,298, which is down 1,220 over the week, hurting badly from a lot of AI fears and one of these fear itself-driven things where people started talking about how AI is probably overvalued, not bringing in enough money, and that sentiment spread. And believe it or not, a stock market can drop 1,000 points in a day that way, where people just hear this talk and they wind up selling, very dependent on rumors of various qualities. Oil, West Texas Intermediate, $70.18. That's down almost $7. That's oil traders and people buying and selling and apparently have decided that the Gulf War will generally be calmed down, if not completely ended. So if they can get the oil through the strait and so on, and there aren't any fears that it's going to go back to where it was a month or two ago, then it may help. And I am seeing these personally at the pumps. My local one dropped 20 cents over the past week. Bitcoin, 59,768, dropped 4,300. A bad half year for Bitcoin. It lost about a third of its value since January. British pound, 1.3208, down 0.13 of a cent. Euro 1.1393, down 0.63 of a cent. Good time for foreign travel. Yeah, check those fares for Europe. You may save more on these lower currencies than any higher airfare, any airfare difference will cost you. Japanese 100 yen coin is still at 62 cents, still going nowhere. So overall, it's the metals that are doing terrible right now. Stocks outside AI are still good. We have the bad AI effect could spread or not. Possibly there are a lot of other things that are tied in with AI that's not as quite as clear. But yes, so we might be heading into a new time, really a new time in general, with a new set of considerations if the Gulf War does stay wound down. There are other things that will pop up that we'll find out about, and I'll tell you about as I hear about them.
Yeah, we know that you're going to be there for us every Monday. It's James B. Huntington, local economist and author with a local perspective on the economy. We appreciate it, James B.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, listeners.
Coming up, could engineering the Earth's climate help slow global warming or create a whole new set of risks? We'll speak with filmmaker Ben Colina about his new documentary, Plan C for Civilization, and the debate over one of the most controversial ideas in climate science. That's next. This is Radio Chatskill.
Picture it. You're trying to pick a place for dinner. One restaurant has 100 great reviews and 2 really bad ones. Do you make the reservation?
Once we think about something in negative terms, that way of thinking about it tends to stick in our minds and resist subsequent attempts to change it.
Why our minds are biased toward the negative. This week on Hidden Brain from NPR. Today at 2 on Radio Catskill.
From media to tech to politics, the world around us is changing. Sometimes it's hard to know what you can rely on or trust. Your support means that NPR and this station will be here for you tomorrow and the next day and the day after that. We're not going anywhere. Show up for public radio today. Donate now and thank you.
Make your donation at wjffradio.org.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. As the effects of climate change become more visible around the world, some scientists are exploring an idea once considered the stuff of science fiction, deliberately altering Earth's atmosphere to cool the planet. It's a concept known as solar geoengineering, and it's the focus of a new documentary, Plan C for Civilization. Ahead of a July 2nd screening and discussion at Upstate Films Star Cinema in Rhinebeck, filmmaker Ben Colina joins us now to talk about the debate and why this conversation is becoming increasingly urgent. Ben, thanks for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome, Tim. Thanks for having me.
So this documentary tackles one of the biggest questions facing everyone. Should we deliberately engineer the Earth's climate to fight global warming? What drew you to the story? I mean, this is a big one.
Yeah, it is. It took me about 15 years to make this film, if that's any indication.
Wow.
You know, I think I came to it because I've been thinking about climate-related environmental issues for a long time. And in the mid-aughts, I guess, I started hearing about these ideas and having made some films already, and actually with a couple of local Hudson Valley filmmakers, Barbara Edger and Sven Husaby, I realized that, you know, if we didn't do the thing that Al Gore was telling us we needed to do, cut emissions and so forth, that there could be some pretty severe consequences. And in that case, these ideas that, like you said, seem kind of crazy and out there might stop seeming quite so crazy. And so that just piqued my curiosity and got me thinking and pursuing this.
So for folks who might be hearing this term solar geoengineering for the first time, what is that? And why are scientists seriously discussing it now?
So it's actually just a ridiculous made-up term, solar there's a whole story behind it, which I'll save for another day. But, you know, really one thing to think of this is it's sunlight reflection is what it is. And, you know, essentially it's acknowledging the fact that, you know, the greenhouse effect, which is essentially this thermal blanket we're creating, trapping in radiation that would otherwise escape from the Earth is what's causing the planet to warm up. But it's only sort of half the equation, because the other half is the sunlight that comes in and heats the Earth in the first place. And so, you know, for a long, long time, we've been strictly focused on how do we stop making this blanket thicker, right? And now people are saying, well, we kind of failed to do that quickly enough. We're making good progress on, you know, renewable energy and so forth, but it's going to take a really long time before the Earth would start to cool back down or even stabilize. So is there another quicker way to cool the planet? And that's where scientists have started looking at things like certain volcanoes that erupt and spread shoot particles up into the stratosphere that are reflective, sulfur dioxide in particular. And we've seen in the past, like Mount Pinatubo in 1991, erupted and cooled the planet by a degree Fahrenheit for about a year. And so they're basically asking, could we do the same thing ourselves if we felt we needed to? And so that's really what the concept is. And those particles would fall out of the atmosphere after about a year, and you'd have to just keep replenishing it in perpetuity. And there's all kinds of reasons why it's not a good idea, but it's in fact a really bad idea. But the question is, you know, is it worse than the alternative?
The title Plan C for Civilization suggests we've already moved beyond other options. What does Plan C mean?
Well, you know, in my mind, Plan A is, you know, if the goal is to kind of stabilize the climate, have a climate like the one that we experienced for the last, say, 10,000 years or so, Plan A would be to just stop putting up as much, you know, carbon dioxide. Plan B would be to start taking carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. And then Plan C is, well, if neither of those works, reflect sunlight. So to me, that's the question. That's the Plan C.
One thing about the film is that it doesn't take a clear side. Why was it important to present the debate rather than advocate for a particular solution for you?
Yeah, I mean, this is something that, you know, as you sort of suggested earlier, like nobody knows much about. And, you know, so my job, my interest is not to tell people what to think about this idea, because I think, you know, unless you're, you know, like a sociopath or something, the first time you hear about this idea, this idea of deliberately altering the planet's climate and reflectivity is crazy, you know, if you were imagining like Mars, for instance, maybe that's fun because no one lives there. There's nothing, there's no harm to be done in thinking about changing the climate there. But here, you know, obviously it's really kind of scary. We don't know what would happen exactly if we did it. And so it's not the first choice, you know, that one would go to. And I think I really want to respect people's need to kind of process what this whole idea is about and to do my best job showing them, you know, just sort of where we're at right now, and not just where we're at, but why we're there. And, you know, the why is because we just haven't acknowledged and moved quickly enough with the urgency to prevent these things from spiraling. And now we have to really contemplate ideas like this. And it's not just this. There are other ways to reflect sunlight. There's other ways to try to stabilize the climate. But, you know, to me, it's really opening up, say, 20 years after an inconvenient truth, a new chapter in how we start to think about what our role really might need to be on this planet as stewards.
You know, engineering the climate really does sound like something out of science fiction or something a James Bond villain might cook up. But, you know, climate change really can feel overwhelming or abstract. And then there's this big sort of, you know, wacky idea of engineering the climate. How do you make such complex scientific topics like this relatable?
You know, I mean, ultimately when I started making this film, I realized, you know, as much as I think there are problems with taking really complex ideas and kind of embodying them in the character journey of a person, you know, because people are fallible, people are complex, and you know, I hate to take something this complex and kind of, you know, reduce it to how you feel about your protagonist. I also recognize that's how we all, you know, if I'm getting out of my sort of like ivory tower, like we all watch films about people, right, and what they come up against, the challenges when they try to do something, and so that's why I settled on the story of David Teeth, and not just David, but these other two kind of goofballs, self-described goofballs in the film, Luke and Andrew from Make Sunsets, who started a for-profit company to start doing this themselves with balloons.
And you know, they're pretty funny, to be honest. And David's very serious. And you know, you follow this journey and you learn about solid geoengineering through what these people are trying to accomplish and what people are pushing back on. And you know, I think I did a pretty good job. It's a really complex subject, but you know, I like to describe it, and if you see it, you'll know why. As an inconvenient truth meets Breaking Bad. So, you know, I won't elaborate too much on that, but I promise you'll understand if you go see it.
The documentary's been screening during major climate events in London, New York City, University of Pennsylvania. After the screening that's coming up July 2nd in Rhinebeck at Upstate Films, you'll be joined by Oscar-nominated filmmaker Robert Stone for a discussion. What kinds of conversations have audience been having with you guys after seeing the film?
And there's no shortage of questions in the Q&A. you know, and there's a lot of questions about what I think, you know, what I think. I'm not a scientist. I'm just someone who's been closely following this for a lot of years. But I think it's you know, it's something that people wrestle with deeply. I think it touches on so many dimensions of you know, what it means to be human and what it means to actually recognize that we really are kind of steering this ship that we're on, this planet and its climate right now. And so people want to know about the science. They want to know a lot of things about like what might happen, what might not happen. There's a lot of questions about trust, and I think that underlies a lot of this conversation, because as you play this out in your mind, if you imagine a world where some countries would start to do this, who do you trust to decide what particles to use, how much of them to use? You know, they are going to, by definition, change the planet's climate and weather to some extent. How do you decide, you know, if there's a storm, whether or not that storm was caused by the geoengineers, right? It's so complex when you really get down to it. And the questions that it raises about who has power and how it gets used and people, whether they're profiting off it, all of this comes up in the film. And I think really just reflects a lot of the bigger questions that we're grappling with in society right now about, you know, who gets to make decisions for all of us. We can really see we're in this very tightly woven world where everything intersects.
If audiences aren't staying around to ask a question, what is the biggest question you hope audience are still asking themselves when the credits roll and they go home?
It's a great question. I mean, I think that if I had, you know, my wish, it would really be for people to watch this film and go, wow, that seems like a really bad idea. But we don't know enough yet, so let's do research on this. Let's do research on other ideas responsibly. But ultimately, like, what can we do to push this as far into the future as possible? Like, we know the solutions right now. We know we need to get off of fossil fuels and carbon as quickly as we can without crashing the economy. And we need to start figuring out how to pull CO2 out of the atmosphere. These are just really fundamental, you know, people can argue about these things all they want, but it's pretty basic science. And so I think it just should renew our enthusiasm about asking ourselves what role we can each play in this. And you know, I know it maybe sounds a little naive and so forth or trite, but I think it's really important. I think what the film does, hopefully, is shows people who are trying to do things and they're not kind of getting all wrapped up about whether or not, you know, they should try or shouldn't try. And so hopefully people will ask themselves some of those questions.
That's Ben Kalita. His documentary, Plan C for Civilization, screening and Rhinebeck at Upstate Films this Thursday. I think I misspoke earlier. The post-film discussion is just with you, Ben, so there's more time to talk to you Thursday. There's more information at plancforcivilization.com. Ben, thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That's going to do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. A note that sports report with Mark and Ronald will air tonight on the local edition. That's at 6 here on Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Tavern on Main, where modern American cuisine meets classic favorites. Dinner, weekend brunch, craft cocktails, and warm hospitality on Main Street in Jeffersonville. More at tavernonmainny.com.
The Trump administration has made massive cuts to research at labs and universities in the United States. Now, a growing number of scientists are looking elsewhere for work.
When I went on the job market, I started looking around overseas.
I'm Scott Detrow. How the Trump administration may be causing a brain drain in the U.S. on the next All Things Considered from NPR News.
Listen to All Things Considered this afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's weather, clouds and sun with a shower in places this afternoon, high 83, cloudy and a low of 60 tonight. We're looking at a heat wave developing from Wednesday into Friday with temperatures in the mid to upper 90s. On Point is next.